strange noise.
That's gross.
All she does is want it. She just wants to speak, man. That's how she gets it across.
I always thought of it as more of like a chuckle.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought she was always kind of clearing her throat in an annoying way.
Because she does that noise when she says something that she thinks is funny or like, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's a chuckle and sometimes it's a, let me speak.
But it sounds the same. It's just one of those things. I don't know.
But yes. Hi. Ahem. Welcome. Welcome to another episode of Why Do We Own This DVD? The podcast where we go through our DVD collection and say, why? And I know why. Or how did we end up with this? Who bought this for us? Did you buy this? Did I buy this? Was it on sale? It must have been on sale. Was this a thrift store purchase?
Can you hear my eyes rolling? Right
I could.
You done?
Hi. We are Why Do We Own This DVD? And we are in the middle of our Harry Potter month. We're inching towards the end. We're in the fifth year of these kids' lives. The fifth year of their school lives, I should say. We're talking about Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. Quick thoughts before we get into it. You had said this was the one that you remembered the least. I remember you saying that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a piece of cereal on my robe. I just pulled off.
Because you're a slob.
Oh, my God.
It's because you're a slob.
Yeah, you said you remembered this one the least.
Mm.
Watching it, when did we watch it? Last night? We watched it last night?
Sure.
Well, did it all come back? Was it like, wow, I don't remember this?
No, it all came back. Yes. Long story short, it all came back and I remember everything.
I'm not in the mood to make anything
short. I remember everything. I have the gift of instant recall. Let's move on.
We just got started.
I know.
I'm not in a rush. Are you in a rush? Got my tea. Got my microphone. Turn your phone off. I know you're playing games. So you remembered this movie when you were watching it?
Yep. Sure did. All of it. Every last word. Yep.
Are you going to join in on this?
Yep. Going to join in. Going to talk. Going to give
Sean!
My opinion.
Pause this shit now.
Hold on. I got to get to New Zealand.
Can we continue?
Sure, go ahead.
I'm asking you a serious question.
Yeah, let's go.
So, Order of the Phoenix. This movie, it's the fifth movie in the series, the fifth movie in the book series. This movie opened July 11th, 2007.
It seems weird, but okay.
Which is actually, what did it?
So, did it open like 7 months after the previous one?
No, 2 years
oh,
almost.
Oh, it was, okay.
November 2005. July 2007.
Wow. Hey, what was that noise?
That was Cora crying.
Seriously, I thought I heard talking. That was weird.
The film was released 10 days before the final book was released.
Wait.
Mm-hmm. 2007.
Oh, wait. I smacked our cat in the
okay.
face.
Yeah, this movie was released the same month as the final book. It was a busy Harry Potter month. I remember where we saw this movie. We saw, I think this was the only time we were ever at this movie theater.
Hmm.
Ontario Mills.
Remember, oh.
Do you remember that mall? This is where we saw this movie.
I vaguely remember.
I don't know why. I mean, I know we were living in Corona, but was there nowhere else to go?
I'm trying to remember.
Ontario Mills? Is that even around anymore?
Ontario, what that looks like.
It's just a big one of those big weird
no, kind
of
no,
weird malls. It wasn't even a mall. I don't even know. It was,
it's
but
like
it
an,
wasn't.
Isn't it like an outlet mall kind of?
It was kind of like an outlet mall. It had a weird bookstore in it. That was like a book. What was that weird like used bookstore? Book Smart? Book?
Nope. No.
You know what I'm talking about though. Crown Books. It was kind of like a Crown
was
Books.
Like a, was it a Super Crown?
Kind of like, yeah, that's the only story I
was
remember.
It one of those that would, it had been a Super Crown and it
like some of the books were like super cheap but some were full okay. price It did make sense.
I don't know.
That's the only story I remember it on.
I don't like this story. Let's move on.
But that's where we saw this movie.
I don't care. Let's
go. In 2007.
I don't care. Let's move on.
It was our last year of being single parents.
Wait.
Nope. Last year of being...
childless parents.
Childless. We weren't parents yet.
Oh, yeah. A childless couple.
It was our last year of fun. I guess. This movie is directed by David Yates. This was his first in a series of many. He is still considered to be the Harry Potter director since he's doing the Fantastic Beasts series. This was his first. And he believes he was asked to do this movie because the studio saw him fit to handle an edgy and emotional film with a political backstory. So I guess his previous stuff he had done, which I'm not going to look at, I don't know. He's good with the like kind of British politics, but not too heavy.
Which
I think these final movies are very heavy in, if you want to say heavy, in politics.
Yeah, they are.
And they thought he was a good fit for kind of balancing it all.
Okay. That's a weird, oh yeah, that's a weird...
I guess Emma Watson said that this movie in particular talks about life after July 7th. Do you remember what happened on July 7th in London?
The bombings?
Yeah. It was the bus bombings.
The bus one. And yeah.
That's like their 9/11, basically.
Yeah.
The way she was talking about the way people behave when they're scared, the way truth is often denied and all the things our society has to face. Facing the fact that the authority is corrupted means having a nonconformist approach to reality and power. Those are her words. Kind of comparing this movie, which the July 7th bombings happened in 2005,
mm-hmm.
which is actually before Goblet of Fire, but obviously they had already made it and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
Post July 7th, England was a lot different in 2007 when this came out. So I think kind of spoke to a lot of that, if that makes sense to anyone. This is written by Michael Goldenberg, the only movie that Steve Kloves did not adapt for this series.
Who?
Michael Goldenberg.
Who's that?
He wrote the screenplay for Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix.
Good to know.
The only one Steve Kloves didn't adapt because he was actually working. He was too busy.
Oh, okay.
Mommy, did you plan this out in your entire life? Starting from the first movie. At first I was like, oh, it's because this book is too long and he didn't know how to do it. But because this Order of the Phoenix is the longest book in the series. It's 900 some pages.
I don't know.
To adapt 900 some pages into a two hour movie. Because this movie is, it's shorter than Chamber of Secrets. It's just over 2 hours. Maybe 210. About there, it was, about 210. I don't know how people do that. I don't know what they decide to cut out. I mean, I know what was cut out, but how do you make those decisions? It's really, because, there's the people like, oh, God, couldn't we just leave everything in, just be a really long movie? And then there's people like, you got to wrap it up in two hours.
Well, I think one of the ways to do it is to go, what's the main...
the main plot theme throughout the movie.
What's the main focus of our story? And then what are these side stories that don't affect it? And hang on.
Yeah. I don't remember. Oh, yeah. Adapting a long book. That's what we were talking about.
Yeah. So whatever doesn't. So, yeah.
Yeah. You decide the main plot. You take out the things that won't affect the story going forward. You know how the whole thing was like, oh, we might not have creature in this movie.
Yeah.
And JK was like, well, you can take him out, but then you might run into some problems. And if you end up making a seventh movie, is how she kind of said it.
Well,
because I guess.
Meaning you're going to have to make a seventh movie. So
you better fucking.
You're going to have to keep
put him in for 5 seconds. It's their 50th year. Obviously, the last time we saw these kids, Tribe Wizard Tournament, Cedric died. Some weird shit was going on. And as Hermione says at the end of the fourth movie, everything is going to change, isn't it?
Yep.
And Harry's
sure
like,
does.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's like, okay, well. And it does. People are going to their, you know, fifth year of Hogwarts, or they're going to Hogwarts, and a lot of people think Harry was lying about what happened to Cedric. A lot of people don't believe him because the Ministry of Magic doesn't believe that Voldemort's actually back.
Yeah, according to the government, essentially.
Yeah, it's fake news.
Everything Harry said didn't happen.
Everything Harry's saying, everything Dumbledore is saying. A lot of people think Harry is just making this shit up.
But my question, though, would be, okay, so if... Let's say, let's go with the theory that Harry is lying about Voldemort being back. Who killed Cedric, or how did he die?
How does Cedric die? They have no explanation for it. They wouldn't have. You know? I mean, how would they back that up?
So, I mean, either they're saying Harry killed him.
Which is nuts, but okay.
But then
that's never said,
but
though.
Then I mean, if that's the case, then... the ministry would be all over Harry. But so obviously, according to the ministry, Cedric died somehow.
An unfortunate accident.
But yeah, that he just...
his heart just stopped.
Okay.
It's like Thelma Todd. Did she really die of carbon monoxide poisoning in her car? Why was there blood? Like they said it's a common thing to happen to corpses.
Like that one... basketball player who died on the court.
Yeah, I mean, you hear those stories of like
kids who die on the field. Just
yeah, well, just don't play sports. God.
But yeah. So I mean, they're supposing that that's probably what happened then to.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I love how this movie starts. I love this opening scene. The whole sequence. Harry's, you know, Privet Drive. It's a hot-ass summer. It's unusually hot.
You hear the radio talking about, or the TV, or whoever it is, the voiceover talking about record heat and blah, blah, and it's going to go on for a while.
Yeah, because things are weird. You know, things are kind of happening.
They're having an unusual heat spell.
Climate change, maybe? I think Voldemort is behind climate change. And then Harry's just, you know, having a humdrum summer at Privet Drive as normal, and Dudley and his friends decide to just fuck with him. And that scene gives me the chills. Like, I'll never forget in the theater just going, this movie is on a completely different level than the past four. In terms of maturity and intensity. And, you know, Dudley comes up. He's like, you know, telling Harry, he's like, I hear you crying or screaming at night. Who's Cedric? Is that your boyfriend?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, Dudley's a fucking ass in this movie.
He's a...
Don't kill Cedric. He was making fun of Harry and these dreams and his mom. And he's like, where's your mom, Harry?
She's dead. He's such a perfect bully in this movie.
He's just a bully. He's not... You know, I know we've compared him and Draco. Now Draco is evil in a very...
Draco is a very uninformed bully. Like, he's only a bully...
Draco?
Yeah, because... He only knows privilege.
Yeah.
He's completely ignorant to just how other people might, how lesser thans live. Whereas Dudley is fully aware of the lesser thans. Aww. And he's certainly not a 1% bully like Draco is.
Mm.
He's a low class.
Low-class bully.
But he's going to use his bullying to elevate himself out of that.
I mean, I'm not saying they're lower class because they're just very middle class.
He's a very non-wealthy.
They're just middle class.
He's a very non-elite bully.
Yeah, elite. That's the word.
Whereas Draco's a child of privilege and money.
I mean, they're both bullies. They're both different kinds of bullies.
Yeah.
And I love Dudley in this movie, but he's so...
Like, Draco looks down on people because that's how his family does it.
That's how his family does
it. And that's what he thinks they're supposed to do.
And Dudley's just like, I just want to just...
Whereas Dudley's like,
this kid up.
I finally found somebody that I can pick on.
I can pick on. Yeah.
Because he talks about how, you know, picking on 10-year-olds.
Yeah. Harry's like, did you find a 10-year-old to beat up? This one deserved it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's a shit. He's not a shit the same way that Draco is, but God, and this one, I just remember getting the chills, being like, God, he's walking a fine line. You know, is your mom, you know, is your mom dead or whatever? And yeah, and Harry obviously loses it, you know, pulls out his wand, and then suddenly, you know, it gets dark and cold and windy, and
you can see their breath.
You see, yeah, they run, and Harry's like, starts, you know, they run, they book it,
mm-hmm.
and they go into the tunnel. And
I love that.
This whole opening sequence, I think, is so goddamn good.
It's
so
very
stressful.
It's that whole, it's like a, it's weird because it looked like a Steadicam shot.
Oh, them running?
It looks different.
He had never seen that kind of filming.
It looks like a handheld. It looks like Saving Private Ryan.
It looks handheld.
But it's too high to be.
Because it is kind of looking almost down on
them.
So
it looks like they're on a camera truck.
Yeah.
With a handheld.
We've never seen that kind of filming in this movie before.
Like, it's almost like at a three-quarter elevated angle.
Yeah. Like, that's like,
like, it's for sure not on a dolly. It's not on
it's a, it's just a modern action shot that you see, not in every movie, but you see it in you see it in certain movies.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, so it doesn't take you out. It just like makes you think, whoa, this is more intense than I've seen Harry Potter be before.
Yeah.
And it is. I mean, they're in the tunnel, and then suddenly there's Dementors there. We haven't seen Dementors.
And these look different than the ones we saw.
They're a little different.
They're not less cloaky.
Yeah, they're like,
they're skeletons.
On. Yeah. Which, you know, they've gotten better at the CG. It's been 4 years since we've seen the last Dementors. I mean, they're Dementors at Dementor, but...
Right. No, I know. I mean,
they've upgraded their CG so they can show more now instead of just a cloak, I think.
But see, the cloak ones were almost scarier to me. Even though they did take... They did kind of look more like ring wraiths when they're all cloaked.
Yeah.
Whereas these look like fucking flying ghouls
that are going to suck out your soul.
Yeah.
And they actually get to Dudley and they start sucking out his face. You know, his face is more. Harry does his Expecto Patronum, gets rid of his Expecto Patronum, gets rid of Dudley's.
What would a muggle.
Would they feel the same effects?
Like, as far as Dudley was concerned, was he just having just some kind of uncontrollable, like, seizure kind of thing? Where he...
Like, did he see the Dementor?
Well, he... Obviously, we know he can't see it because they explain that. Fudge explains it.
Mm.
He's, oh, how convenient that you said Dementors because muggles can't see Dementors.
Oh.
So
he
what was Dudley...
Felt...
Like, he was having a fit?
Yeah, like... Something overcame him, and you know, you have the combination of all the happiness was, you know, whatever, however Ron describes it, all the happiness was gone from the world. And physically, he probably felt like, I don't know.
So then when Mrs. Fig comes by, because she's a squib, we only know that from the books.
We only know that from the book. We don't know what Mrs. Fig is in the movie.
We know that she's kind of placed there by Dumbledore.
Mm-hmm. But
she's been there since Harry has been there.
Yeah.
Right?
Which, I mean, it's one of the benefits of the books. You know a lot more about what Mrs. Fig's role is.
Because we
meet Mrs. Fig in the first book.
But just from the movie, we know that Harry knows who this lady is.
Yeah. Because he says, oh, Mrs. Fig.
Yeah.
How did you know? Or, you know, how'd you know that?
So then I guess we can infer that she's been there the whole time because
you can kind of put two and two together. You do get the benefit if you read the book.
Do we know that she's a squib in the movie?
No.
Though?
That's never said. I don't.
We can only infer.
I don't think. Do they say that at the trial ever?
No.
They say it in the book in the trial.
Yeah.
I think it's just, it's kind of like she's shown as kind of an incompetent wizard who's kind of forgetful and just kind of, you know, that's just her personality. Yeah. And that's kind of what they
like. We know she's connected to the magic world. I guess we don't even necessarily.
But she's kind of like a Neville, you know, like, well, can't really depend on her. Can't really trust her to remember something.
So we don't know that, as far as the movie goes, we don't know that she has no magical powers.
No.
We don't, because.
I don't think so.
Do we even know that Filch is a squib?
No, because that scene wasn't in the movie either, where Harry finds the letter, Quill. Yeah. I mean, a quick spell.
All the weird shit that he's trying to.
He's a letter, the quick spell lessons and.
He's almost like, what's that, was it the Munsters? Where there's that kind of normal blonde lady.
Yeah, Adam
Herman's wife.
One of those humpsters.
It's the monsters. Yeah,
monsters are Adam's family. I get mixed up.
She's the non-monstery person. So she's sort of like the.
But wasn't she married into the family?
Yeah. But she's not like a monstery person.
No.
She's an outsider who's welcomed. She's like the Tom Hagen.
She's a muggle. He's just a Tom Hagen.
Where he's not connected to the family, but he's part of the family.
Sure.
So Filch, we don't even know that he's a squib.
Well, in the book you do.
No, I know. But, well, we know from the book, we know that Mrs. Fig is a squib.
Okay, your movie's talking.
But from the movies, we don't know that Filch is a squib.
We think he's a wizard because they don't even talk
about it. Well, we know he's...
There's never
connected
a time
to the magic world because he works at fucking Hogwarts.
But there's never a scene in the movie where it's like he doesn't know how to do something.
Well,
we
never see him do magic either.
No, but we never second guess.
But we just assume that he's...
Oh, he's just a wizard too.
So unless he's one of those married into kind of things, he...
No.
So Mrs. Fig is the same way though. We just assume that since she knows Dumbledore...
She must be a wizard.
So she's some kind
of
witch.
Sorry. Yeah.
Because at the trial, though, they get her to try to describe the Dementors, and she's speaking in the vaguest.
Even Fudge is like, well, anyone could read that from a textbook.
Yeah, she only knows it from what she's read because she has no magical abilities.
But she can still see the Dementors.
But can she, though?
She can.
She didn't see them because she came after.
But she, yeah, okay. Okay.
Hold on.
Don't ask her.
Hey, Google, can squibs see Dementors?
Of course they can. They're not muggles. They're not mudbloods. There's a lot of silences because you can't hear her on this. Although Harry isn't convinced Arabella Fig can see Dementors, she certainly describes their soul-sucking powers rather well and protests that she can. Whatever squibs can or can't do or see and can't see, they have more than proved their worth in the wizarding world. There's an article. Everything you need to know about squibs.
I would assume that they could, though, because Filch can
They're not muggles.
Because Filch can see the ghosts.
Yeah.
Would a muggle see the ghosts? Or I guess it would be like a muggle seeing a ghost. Maybe. God damn it. I don't know if that's the same thing then, because...
They are still considered to be witches or wizards.
They just have no ability.
But they usually have a stronger affinity with muggles.
Mm-hmm.
They face the same prejudice as muggle-borns. They can't be sorted. Did you know that?
Because they don't have any fucking magical powers. Because they're not magical.
It makes things complicated.
So she can't see the Dementors. There's no way she can see Dementors.
Uh-huh. There's a squib in Umbridge's family.
Which I'm sure she's ashamed of. But
squids have been known to try and teach themselves the magic. Of course, Filch tried the quick spell courses. They can still immerse themselves in the magical.
Right.
I think they'd be able to see Dementors.
I don't think so.
I think they could.
You can either go to Twitter
They're not muggles.
Go to Reddit and
I'm not even going to dive into that. Let's continue. So Harry is he is expelled from Hogwarts because he performed Expecto Patronum.
He gets a letter.
A letter from Mathilda Hopkirk.
She's the department.
She's the one who
She's the head of education.
Yeah, she sends them all their lesson plans.
Because
these are the books you need this year.
Really only Dumbledore would be able to expel someone from Hogwarts, right? Or could the...
You would think.
Or would the Department of Education be able to overrule...
We don't want the ministry getting involved.
Yeah, but they're already... We know that.
So yeah, because Harry did the Expecto Patronum spell, he's expelled because you can't do magic outside of school. But then he's taken from his house by the Order of the Phoenix.
The fourth autofill for... Can squibs is can squibs see Dementors?
I know. It came up in mine, too.
Okay.
It probably got the same fucking thing I did.
It is under debate if squibs are able to see Dementors.
Yeah, it is. Goodbye.
So, no, they can't.
Sure, they can. So, Harry is taken in the middle of the night, but the Order of the Phoenix comes and rescues him. And by order, I mean not the whole order. We get Mad-Eye Moody comes, mm-hmm. and
who's Kingsley Shacklebolt?
Kingsley Shacklebolt and Nymphadora Tonks. Got some new characters in the mix. And some people I don't know.
Does Lupin show up?
Is he there? Feel like he does in the...
He's not there. Not in the movie.
He's not in the movie, no. Really, Moody's the only one that we recognize.
We see a new... There's like a...
There's like a woman. We don't get a...
There's like one guy and one woman we don't know.
We'd never say her names. Tonks is a new character played by Natalia Tina. We talked about her in a previous episode. We were talking about a boy. She is a... What can she do?
She's an animagus. Animagus.
No, she's not.
Oh, no. She's the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
She's a polymorph. Anamorph.
Tonks. What can Tonks do? Shit. I can't type when I'm... Tonks, Harry Potter. She's a metamorphagus.
Oh, yeah.
Which they can turn into different things. They can change their hair color. They can change their face.
She can make like she's because we see her making like pink animal snouts and stuff.
She's new character in this movie. They come in. She's part of the Order of the Phoenix, which was actually formed back in the 70s to defeat Voldemort.
Now like they've in Lily and James's generation. Yep, yeah.
Now they've regrouped because obviously Voldemort is back. They come and take Harry, and Harry's like, I've been expelled. And Moody's like, you haven't been expelled yet. You have a trial. Yeah, I know. I see the cat, too. So Harry has to go to trial, right?
That looks so fucking intimidating.
So the first, like, 200 pages of this book is the most stressful part of the whole series for me. So first, before he has trial... He goes to where the order meets. 12 Grimald Place? I think
it's 12 Grimald Place. It's not 13, which you would think it would be. But.
No, it wouldn't be 13. 12 Grimald Place is where the order meets. It's actually Sirius Black's old home. His old home? Sounds weird. Hidden from muggles in the heart of London. Far from Hogwarts. Far from where Harry lives, which is Surrey. That's where they take him, and Ron and Hermione are already there. The twins are there because Mr. and Mrs. Weasley are part of the order.
Mm-hmm.
And Harry gets there. He's like, oh, there's so much I need to know.
Yeah, why is Hermione there? Just because
she's part of the team. You know, she's there with Ron, you know. Harry's like, so much has been happening. What's going on? No one's told me anything. I haven't seen anything in the news. Voldemort's back, Cedric died, what's going on? And Ron and Hermione are like, we can't... Yeah, I see the cat. It's very funny.
She's playing with the
rubber. I know. Let her play. Ron and Hermione are like, Dumbledore said we can't tell you anything.
Oh, because he confronts them about not sending any correspondence during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, we were told not to.
Yeah, and Harry's pissed. Harry's pissed this entire movie. He's 15. It's a hard time.
I would almost expect to see a Footloose dance.
An angry dance? Dance. He warrants an angry dance, but alas, no dancing. So basically he finds out like the order meets, but they can't tell him anything because he's too young. So he's pissed. But he's got to go to trial.
It's not even that he's too young. It's Molly doesn't want
it's
him.
It's Mrs. Weasley. She's trying to protect him. She's trying to protect him.
He doesn't. It's really just a need to know. He doesn't need to know because the grown-ups will take care of it.
Yet, if you're Harry and you've gone through all this,
yeah,
you want to know. I mean, I don't blame him at all.
Well, yeah.
You're like, you know, you're on that cusp of child and adult. You know, you're 15. You saw Voldemort. You saw Cedric die. What the fuck is going on?
I mean,
I'd be pissed too.
I mean, really, I've confronted him 4 times already.
Yeah, every year at my school. Now. So, I mean, I get his frustration. But he's got more serious matters. He's got to figure out if he can go back to Hogwarts or not.
You know, if Harry had never gone to Hogwarts,
would Voldemort come back?
Would he? There be any of this trouble for him?
No. No, he'd be with the Dursleys, safe and sound.
He'd be miserable at the Dursleys.
Going to whatever fucking school they were supposed to go to.
Yeah. But would...
There would obviously be no story, so why are we even discussing this?
But would Voldemort still come be coming back?
Yeah.
Just not...
Yeah. I don't know. That's... So, Mr. Weasley takes Harry...
I would assume so, because Scabbers is really the catalyst for a lot of it, because Ron takes Peter Pettigrew to Hogwarts.
Mm.
And obviously he's free to run around and...
Yeah.
So...
Okay. So, Harry has to go to the Ministry of Magic to be put on trial to see if he's really expelled or not. Mr. Weasley takes him because he works there. He knows how to get there. They take a phone booth.
But doesn't accompany him to the trial, though.
He cannot go to the trial. He cannot go further than where he was.
Yeah, why?
Because closed doors. Closed trial. That's how it is.
I guess it's...
Cornelius Fudge is running the trial. We had CS, big group of people. Dumbledore's there. He won't make eye contact with Harry. Some... tiny little woman is there. We don't know her name yet. Keeps going. Some people are like, I don't think Harry should go back. He performed a spell. Why were there Dementors? I think he's making it up. There were no Dementors in Little Wingjing. But, alas, after Dumbledore speaks, majority of the people agree Harry should not be expelled. They let him back into Hogwarts against the wishes of a few people, Fudge included.
In the book, I guess you can call them the jurors, but they
all work for the ministry. They're not like public.
They're portrayed as more being
on Harry's side
because they're like, you can produce a Patronus.
Yeah, they're very impressed that he could actually produce a Patronus.
Like some of them can't.
No. So they're just kind of like, wow, why would you make this up? I don't know.
But we don't see that in the movie, though.
No, and I really do love this book. There's so much in it. If you reread any book, I tell people this all the time. I don't. In my head, I do. If you reread any Harry Potter book, fucking reread Order of the Phoenix. There's so much meat in that book. It's so good. TED Talk over. Harry can go back to Hogwarts. Woo! I love in the book where he's headed down to his trial and he passes that big statue with the witch and the wizard.
Standing on the muggles.
Which we don't see elves. Until... No. And Harry's like, if I win this trial, I will put a bunch of money in the fountain.
Like all his money in his pocket, right?
And then he wins and after he wins, he puts all his money in there because he's so fucking relieved. And I just, you feel the relief that he's feeling when he gets acquitted. I don't know what the word is.
Yeah.
Well. It's back to Hogwarts. We have a couple new characters at Hogwarts this year. Fan favorite, Luna Lovegood. Loony, as people call her. Played by Ivana Lynch. Ivana, where is she?
I mean, she's like the, she's sort of the, I don't
she, know. She won the role of Luna Lovegood over 15,000 other girls.
I mean, she's sort of the dream come true. She was like the super fan.
Yeah, she's a super fan.
Did she go to the audition with her own homemade radish earrings?
Yes.
Okay, I remember that, yeah.
She waited in a line of hopefuls that stretched over a mile long. And I guess after her audition, they were done. They're like, we found her. This is Luna. Bye, everyone else.
Wow. I don't remember that.
But yeah. I read that.
That's cool.
Saoirse Ronan was also considered for the role. Hi, bud. Is that how you say her name?
Saoirse Ronan, yeah.
Yeah, she was, which I mean, is Irish as well.
Huh.
But Ivana Lynch, you see her as Luna and you're like, that's perfect. That's exactly who she is.
She's a very, not naive. She's a very, just,
no, she's not naive at all.
A free spirited.
She's very in tune to what's going on.
But she's a very free spirited, almost. She's not ditzy.
It's hard to explain her because
it's ditzy in a way that isn't ditzy.
Yeah.
It's completely unbothered by everything. Like she takes everything in stride.
Yeah. Yeah, she really does. The fact that other students steal her things and she's like, oh, it's all in good fun. And she's not being dumb about it. She's just like, well,
she's
what it is.
She's fully aware of what happens. And it's, yeah. But it doesn't bother her.
She's not bothered. I'm not bothered.
What was her name?
Lauren. Catherine Tate's Lauren,
the
right?
Schoolgirl? Yeah.
I'm not bothered. Was it Lauren? Am I bothered? I'm bothered.
Crap, I can't remember.
I think it's Lauren.
I think you might be
wrong. Yeah, so.
But even Hermione thinks little of her.
Yeah, I mean, she's in Ravenclaw, so she's obviously very smart. You know, we said she's not ditzy. She's very in tune to everything that's going on. But she's kind of like, kooky. I don't know. I mean, you can't explain her. And yeah, Hermione lets it slip. This is Looney. I mean, Luna Lovegood when they first meet her.
And even Hermione's look of like embarrassment at her little
like
slip.
Oh, shit. Yes, they have a.
I think she fell asleep trying to get the.
There's a new Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher this year. Obviously, Mad-Eye not coming back. He's focusing on the Order and all the other shit he's doing. We have Dolores Umbridge. Talk about Dolores Umbridge for a moment.
She is.
So Stephen King said the character of Dolores Umbridge was, quote, the greatest make-believe villain to come along since Hannibal Lecter. Now, I know Stephen King is a huge Potter fan, but when I compare Umbridge to Voldemort, I'm sorry, Umbridge is 50,000 times worse.
Oh, yeah.
She's awful in such a gratifying way.
Because Voldemort never pretends to be nice.
Yeah. He never made me mad and frustrated. When I read this book, I'm like, I hate her so fucking much.
Like, Voldemort's whole thing is, I'm the best at being evil.
Yeah. He's and like, I'm the greatest evil
and
man.
And I'm going to show everyone, and I'm not embarrassed by it. I'm not going to hide behind anything.
Yeah.
Whereas Umbridge is hiding behind kittens and pink.
I do love her place.
And sugar.
Yeah.
And smiles.
Mm-hmm. But she's evil incarnate. Like, she's... Oh. So Dolores Umbridge, she works for the Ministry. And she's now working at Hogwarts because the Ministry is like, we don't think Dumbledore is right in the head. We're going to start getting involved with this school. And even Hermione catches it. And
she's
like,
she's the first one, really.
Yeah, because when they introduce, you know, the new teachers, you know, they're like, what does this mean? And Hermione's like, it means... Ministry is getting involved, or I mean, I forgot what she says.
Like, the Ministry is meddling in Hogwarts.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Which shouldn't be happening, basically. And Umbridge is on the side of Voldemort is not back. Harry Potter lies. Dumbledore lies. And even when Harry tries, you know, she's. In class, she's like, okay, no wands. You're just going to read from a book. Why would you ever have to learn these spells?
Like,
who would ever be after you?
Theoretical practice is enough.
Yeah, and she's like, who would ever want to be after you? And Harry's like, well, I don't know. Maybe Lord Voldemort or whatever, because he's a smartass. And she's like, okay, detention. And this is an interesting detention. It's different from all the other detentions Harry's had. He has to write lines. I must not tell lies, but...
Did you ever call them lines? Like, that's a punishment you're familiar with. I mean, like, you...
Only from The Simpsons.
Oh.
I know.
No, I mean, but did they ever issue that in school?
No, not with mine. Not with my generation or my school.
Oh, really?
No. That was only something I saw on TV.
Oh, because we had that.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even.
But we
the only time I ever saw it was The Simpsons.
Oh, really?
Opening credits.
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah. Oh, really?
That wasn't a thing I ever.
We never called them lines. They're always called standards. You have to write standards.
No. So Harry has to write, I must not tell lies over and over, but he gets no ink to write with, just a quill.
He's using one of her quills.
One of her quills, her special quills. And the ink actually, it turns out to be blood from his hand.
And as he writes, it cuts.
Carves into his
Yeah, it skin. Carves into his flesh.
Yeah, I must not tell lies. Yeah, that sounds painful.
Like, I mean, they look like razor blade cuts in his hand. I mean, it's.
But he refuses to report any of this to Dumbledore because he's like, Dumbledore is too busy for me. He didn't make eye contact with me at the trial. He hasn't spoken to me. Harry's pissed that Dumbledore's not telling him anything because he doesn't know why. He's been mysteriously ignoring him.
Mm-hmm.
But Umbridge's control kind of takes over the whole school. She gets Filch involved.
Well, really, it kind of reveals itself that her ulterior motive was to take over the school for the ministry.
Yeah. So Harry's like, you know what? If they're not going to teach us like proper defense in this class, let's form our own army. So Hermione kind of plans this where she's like, you know, Harry's done all these things against actual threats.
Uh-huh.
What if he taught you guys? We're not learning this in class. What if we took, you know, our own classes? And so they kind of form Dumbledore's army where Harry teaches them, you know, basic spells from like Expelliarmus to Expecto Patronum.
Do we see the name Dumbledore's army prior to when Dumbledore is confronted?
I don't know.
Because in the book, I mean, like we need a name for our group.
Yeah.
And Hermione writes Dumbledore's army on the sign-up sheet.
They have a few different things, a few different ideas.
Yeah. But we see it early on, I mean, in the book. I mean.
Yeah, and they have.
Well, and then she enchants the galleons. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But.
But then Umbridge thinks that something's going on, so she creates that group of Slytherin, which is basically Crabbe and Draco and Goyle, whatever, to be the Inquisitional squad to find out what's going on. Her spies find out where they're meeting because they meet in the, what's the room called?
Room of Acquirement.
The Room of Acquirement, which is a room that kind of appears when someone needs it.
And it appears in the form of what you need.
So it's like the perfect training room for all these spells that these people find. So no one else can find it because that's not what they're looking for. And it's actually first mentioned in the first book. Harry runs into Dumbledore. He's like, I'm looking. He's like, I have to go to the bathroom. So he actually found a bathroom in form of the, you know, Room of a Car, even though we don't really know what that is in the first book. But looking back, I think in the book, in Order of the Phoenix, Harry even's like, I remember when Dumbledore was looking for a bathroom and he found one. I don't know.
Yeah, wasn't it Dumbledore had said he was looking for a bathroom and he found one that he never knew,
something
he'd never
like
seen before.
Yeah.
And he hasn't been able to find it since.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're practicing out, they're training. Harry and Cho kind of start a little thing. Obviously, she's not with Cedric anymore, but she's always kind of liked Harry, and Harry still kind of holds a flame for her. They kind of flirt during their training.
Yeah, they're sort of just kind of testing the relationship waters, I guess.
And so like right before Christmas break, they kiss. It's like the first romantic scene in this whole series, I guess. So they kind of, you know, because she's crying, sort of not crying, but she's talking about Cedric.
Uh-huh.
She's like, did he know all the stuff that they're learning? He's like, well, yeah, he was a really great wizard. He just, Voldemort was better.
Well, and really, I mean, what he should have said was, he didn't even have a chance to fight.
He didn't. We know that because we saw it.
I mean, because he was murdered in cold blood. I mean, yeah. Just
kill the spell.
So I mean,
but you know, mistletoe.
It wasn't like he fought and lost.
Do you think that mistletoe was there, or did Cho create
the
that?
The room made it.
Okay, that makes sense.
That's what the two of them needed.
They needed mistletoe, an excuse to snog, as you would
the
say.
Room provided it.
Thank you, room. So it's the holidays. Harry just kind of hooked up with Cho. He's feeling good, but then he has he's been having kind of these weird vision dreams where he kind of feels like he's looking through Voldemort's eyes, sort of.
He sees things from, I think, what he interprets as being Voldemort's POV.
Mm-hmm. So he has this dream around Christmas time where he's
stalking Mr. Weasley.
He's a snake.
Does he know that it's a snake?
Because he tells Sirius there was a snake, but I was a snake.
Oh, okay.
Right? And it attacks Mr. Weasley in his vision,
yeah.
But he's the one doing the attacking.
Yeah.
So he runs and he tells Dumbledore, I think Mr. Weasley's in danger or something.
Because in the movie, it's Ron and McGonagall rushing Harry to Dumbledore.
Is it? Yeah.
I would assume Ron saw Harry having his freak
maybe,
out.
Yeah.
Ron told McGonagall, and then they took Harry to Dumbledore.
And all the Weasleys are there, and they go to... Harry tells him where he is, because did he see him in the Department of Mysteries? That's what he...
Yeah, I think he knew what the... I think he was able to describe the room to Dumbledore, and Dumbledore knew what it was. Because obviously he knew that it was in the Ministry of Magic. And maybe even that was enough for Dumbledore.
He didn't recognize it, but...
I think he didn't. He knew the door that he had
seen.
Yeah,
because I know, well, in the book, he keeps having these visions that kind of stop at the door, but never opens. But they check on Mr. Weasley, and he was.
Because Dumbledore sends a portrait ghost, essentially.
Well, isn't it Phineas Nigelius, whatever his name is?
Yeah, I don't know.
Phineas Nigelius, the old Slytherin headmaster.
Because, like, these portrait people can... Because
he's connected to Grimmauld Place, Phileas Nigelius. I'm not saying his name right, but that's how I'm going to say it.
Is it like Nigelius or whatever?
He's a black.
But yeah, all these portrait people, they can go between all their other portraits.
Yeah. So they check on Mr. Weasley, and yeah, he's in danger. They take him to St. Mungo's Hospital, which this is the one scene in the book I wish was in the movie because I love this scene.
I don't remember this scene.
Where they go to St. Mungo's and they see Lockhart.
Yeah, and they see the
Longbottoms.
Which is when they know.
They find out about
Neville's
parents.
So in the movie, it's Neville who tells Harry.
Yeah. Neville just says, a witch named Bellatrix Lestrange tortured my parents.
Yeah.
But in the book, we actually see Neville at the hospital.
I do remember that.
That's such a great scene because his mom is... She's folding the gum wrappers and giving it to him, and Neville just puts it in his pocket. He's been collecting his gum wrappers for years, his whole life. Oh, it's such a good scene. It's heartbreaking, but it's so important. And I love when they see Lockhart, who's kind of on the edge of remembering.
Like, he remembers, like, snippets of things.
He remembers snippets. He remembers, you know, it's like, oh, was I a teacher? I must have been awful. You know, like, there's like some funny moments. And
yeah,
I guess
I remember that.
Kenneth Branagh was supposed to be in this movie. They were going to have that scene, but then they ended up not, which is too bad. But they visit Mr. Weasley. I don't know, but he's okay. They celebrate Christmas at Grimmauld Place. Mr. Weasley's back at home. But Harry's like, I don't know why I had this vision and why I was doing the attacking. But when he tells this to Sirius, tells it to Dumbledore, and they decide you need some further training in oculomancy. Oculomancy?
Oculomancy?
Oculomancy.
Right?
Yeah, oculomancy by Snape, which is a way of blocking Voldemort from your mind, basically, is what he's teaching. And obviously Snape and Harry do not get along. The training is very fraught with arguing and fighting, and you're not trying hard enough, and you're being mean. And yeah, so he's doing the training. Meanwhile, there's a huge breakout at Azkaban, right?
Do we know how that happens in the
breakout?
Book?
Oh, I don't remember.
I mean, really?
I feel like we... I mean, they're not at Azkaban when it happens. Like, you're not reading from that point of view.
Who's not at Azkaban?
Like, the reader.
Oh. Because really, in the movie, all we see is an explosion.
We see an explosion. We see this crazy-ass woman.
Well, I mean, yeah. But I mean, but we don't know how the breakout happens. We just...
Not in the movie, no.
We just see an explosion.
Yeah.
Which I've always assumed was just Voldemort's doing. Going over there.
And, yeah, that's what I always assumed. I don't remember in the book. I'd have to...
Oh, I gotta
read that again.
Take a break.
I need a tea. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat. Okay. Took my allergy pill.
The escape at Azkaban. So Bellatrix Lestrange. Bellatrix Lestrange. We find out she's actually the cousin of Sirius Black.
Of notorious murderer.
Sirius Black! She's one of our new characters, played by Helena Bonham Carter. Originally cast Helen McCrory. Helen McCrory? Is that her name? Am I seeing her name right?
I think so. Yeah.
Totally forgetting.
I just saw her name because of her car.
She was originally cast, McCrory, as Bellatrix, but then she revealed she was 3 months pregnant and withdrew from the film because she wouldn't have been able to do all the intense scenes that take place at the ministry. So Helena Bonham Carter was cast instead, and it all worked out because Helen McCrory ended up being Narcissa Malfoy. She got to be in the movies anyway.
And really, I can't picture anyone being as...
Maniacal? Right.
Yeah.
As Helena Bonham Carter kicks it out of the park in this role.
What? Okay.
Cousin of Sirius Black, follower of Voldemort, obviously, his true follower. You never read Cursed Child, did you? You don't know what Bellatrix and Voldemort did, huh?
Did they?
They made a baby!
Did they mash their muggles?
They mashed their muggles. But that's it. Neither here nor there in this story. So she escapes. We find out that she's the one who tortured Neville's parents. So Neville has this like vendetta sort of against her, obviously. What's her name? Umbridge and her inquisitorial squad. They expose Dumbledore's army by using Veritaserum on the students. Particularly Cho. Cho Chang is the one who rats him out. Because she was forced to drink Veritaserum.
Which we don't know till towards the end. I mean,
we see her holding on to Cho, and Cho looks guilty.
Like, it looks like she kind of rats them out.
A little different in the book. There's a Hermione makes a spell where if anyone were to talk about Dumbledore's army to someone,
if anyone betrays their secret, then they break out and
break out into zits. And so Cho's friend breaks out. Cho really doesn't do anything horrible in the book. But Cho tells her friend about it, and her friend tells the inquisitorial squad.
Oh, okay.
So
I don't remember that.
But that's when they kind of summed it up by just saying Cho was taken, forced to drink Veritaserum, tells on them.
Yeah, I thought it was Cho in the book,
Cho's friend.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So their relationship kind of falls apart because she kind of fucked things up. It wasn't really her fault, really. You take it how you will.
Well, I mean, and then by the end, it's all forgiven because then it's revealed that, because I think Snape lets her off the hook by explaining in front of everyone how Umbridge had used the last of his Veritaserum on Cho Chang.
Oh, yeah, he kind of...
He says he name drops her to, yeah. I think, to kind of like let all the kids know that...
Maybe.
She had it wasn't her...
I mean...
It wasn't by choice.
I mean, I think they know that she wouldn't rat. I don't know.
Well, I think they think she did.
Yeah, because they're all pissed when... Give her a thumb. You want to pause there for a second?
Sure.
A few moments later.
I hate kids.
So then, Harry... You know, he's still getting these occlumency lessons, and he has one where he kind of fights back for a moment, and suddenly Harry sees inside Snape's mind.
Mm-hmm.
And we get a fantastic sequence in the book, a fantastic sequence in the movie. I adore this part. So Harry suddenly sees into Snape's mind and sees Snape as a student at Hogwarts.
Uh-huh.
Awkward, gawky, greasy hair, big nose, you know. And he sees a group of kids making fun of Snape, and Harry realizes it's his dad.
Who's leading the pack,
and, you know, Sirius Lupin, you know, the gang back in the 70s. And James is doing the awful spell where he's hanging Snape upside down.
Mm-hmm.
Look at Snivellus's skivvies or whatever the hell he's saying.
In the book, doesn't he pull his trousers down?
Yeah, so everyone can see his.
But in the movie, we don't see it. He's just talking about doing it.
Yeah.
But really, and the whole time, Severus has always been saying how James Potter was
cocky,
a strut.
Yeah, he strutted, and Harry's like, no, he was a good man.
Yeah.
And then suddenly Harry sees his father doing this, and they focus a little bit more on in the book where Harry is like conflicted.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, everything Snape said is right.
Or at least, you know, true.
I think he says this to Sirius. He says it to Lupin. He's like, he was right. And they're like, well, your father was still a good man. Yeah, he did these things, but he was dumb. He was stupid. I think they kind of, you know, they defend him, you know, more in the book. In the movie, they just kind of... They don't really touch upon it again.
Mm-mm.
You know, Snape's like, you know, he's pissed. He's like, lessons are over.
Yeah.
You're done.
And it's weird because I'd always thought that because the spell that looks into your mind is
But occupancy is... To block it.
I always thought that you were seeing what the person was thinking.
Uh-huh.
And obviously Snape isn't thinking of that thing. But so it's almost as if...
Is he?
You get access to their brain and you just... You can kind of, you know...
See their...
Pick and choose what you want to, like,
pick and
dig
choose.
Through,
yeah,
basically.
Maybe.
And so Harry stumbled upon this memory. And
yeah.
I think it causes Snape to remember it, sort of. It brings it to his forefront,
yeah,
of his mind.
And it's, I mean, we don't really get anything more about it in the movie because there just isn't time.
Yeah.
Because Harry is now overcome with another vision he saw of Sirius being tortured by Voldemort.
Yes.
At what he realizes is the Department of Mysteries. And he's like, We got to get there. We have to, you know, and Hermione's like, how are we going to get there? How are we going to do anything?
It's basically a carbon copy of the Weasley vision.
They want to let the order know, so they go to, they find the only fireplace that isn't being monitored by the ministry, which is Umbridge's fireplace, her flu network.
Mm-hmm.
Tell the order, but then Umbridge finds them. She threatens to do the Cruciatus Curse on Harry. She's insane at this moment. She's lost all control.
Yeah, she has like a room full of the kids.
Yeah, she's like, I'm insane now. I don't have any control in the school
I thought
I would.
It's because she's been harangued by the Weasley twins.
Yeah.
Which we didn't really talk about because they disrupt. They decide their time at Hogwarts
is
over.
Yeah.
They're old enough to go off on their own.
They're more suited for the outside
and
world.
And so while the fifth years are taking their OWLs.
Their owls, yeah.
they decide
for some fireworks.
They're gonna put an end to it all.
Yeah.
They're gonna go out in style.
Wait, no, that's nope. Goblet of Fire.
And so, of course, they create mayhem for the test and for Umbridge.
Yeah.
And it wraps up with them sicking a firework dragon on her, basically.
Yeah.
And so when she's comes back to her office, she's like all singed and
yeah, she's sooty. Insane. She's like, I hate children. I'm gonna do the Cruciatus Curse on you because you're gonna tell me where Dumbledore is. And then
what, his secrets and whatever.
Yeah, and Snape comes in and she's like, give me your Veritas serum, give me your truth serum. And he's like, I'm sorry, you used the last of it.
On Miss Chang.
Yeah. And then Harry's like, he's so desperate, he tells Snape they've got Padfoot. They've got Padfoot at the place where it's hidden. Mm-hmm. And because he knows that Snape knows who he's talking about. He knows that name.
I think
he's just taking a
he's
wild
assuming
shot.
He at least knows that Snape has heard that name. Yeah. He may not know who it is.
Yeah.
I think Snape is smart enough to guess who it is at this point.
And
Harry gives him that veiled message of...
Yeah, but they have Padfoot, the place where it's hidden. And Snape's like, he pauses and he turns around. And he's like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, like Umbridge is like, what does he mean? What's Padfoot?
Yeah. What is this? Who's
and
that?
He's like, I have no idea.
But of course, he can't acknowledge what Harry has said. But
does he flash Harry like a glance?
Well, I think the pause in general.
Well, when he stops dead in his tracks, we know that he knows.
Yeah. Yeah, I never really know if he gives Harry a...
Does he acknowledge?
I think he doesn't.
The pause is enough.
Yeah. So I was just like, I'm insane, I'm Cruciatus. and then Hermione's like, wait, no, tell him, Harry, if you won't, I will. And she's like, tells her, it's like a Dumbledore's secret weapon.
Mm-hmm.
I know where it is. And she is in her head thinking, maybe I'll take her to Grop. We haven't talked about Grop.
That is her plan. And then when
he's
we
not
see
there.
That the he's gone, she's like, shit.
She's like, shit, that didn't work.
Right,
so okay. Grop, we find out, is a half giant, right?
He's
a full giant.
It's that, Hagrid's half-brother.
It's his half-brother. Hagrid finds him because Hagrid is gone for the first half of the school year on leave. They don't talk about it really in the movie. They talk more about it in the book. He's off with Madame Maxime trying to scrounge up the giants.
Unsuccessfully.
To get them on Dumbledore's side, not Voldemort's side. But he comes across his half-brother, who is actually full giant, named Grop. And he keeps him in the forest, introduces him to the gang.
This whole thing is confounding to me, though, because Hagrid's half-giant, which means...
His giant mother got with a giant man.
His mother
was full giant, and his father was Muggle,
right?
Or wizard.
So Grop being full giant means that his mom was that size, which is an insane size because it's King Kong and it's Fay Wray.
Yeah.
How
suspension
did that,
of disbelief? Okay.
Like I can believe Chihuahua and Great Dane.
Okay.
How does this work?
Chihuahuane.
But how does this work?
It just does.
It's a...
It just does.
It's a mosquito bite and an elephant. I mean, it's...
It just does. Okay?
How does that
Anyway,
happen?
So Grop, he doesn't know how to speak. He doesn't know how to act. And Hagrid's like, just look after him if I'm not here.
He's almost... I can't remember how he's described in the book, but visually in the movie, he's almost like...
He's smaller than most giants. Say in the book. But
I
anyway, yeah,
mean,
but... Okay.
But he's sort of like depicted as almost being like an autistic child.
Hmm.
Where he has very little...
Social skills? Doesn't know how to act like a person?
He has very little social recognition.
Okay.
He has full motor skills, like he can grab, he can walk, he can do all that shit. But mentally, he just doesn't have the facilities to...
Is that like giants in general? Or I mean, I know they get more into giants in the book when Hagrid tells him his story of going to meet the giant king.
I always figured giants were just giant versions of people. But Grop seems to be sort
special.
Of a special ed kind of giant.
I don't know. Never really thought too much of it.
Like a giant short bus kind of kid.
Okay. So anyway, Hermione's like, maybe if I take her to Grop, he'll kill her or something. I don't know. Hermione, this is her last, you know, grasping at straws moment.
And even Harry's like, what are you doing? She's like, I don't know. I'm just improvising.
She gets there and Grop is not even there. She's like, fuck. But then, luckily, the centaurs arrive. The centaurs come. And of course, Umbridge is like, she views centaurs as non-humans, half-breed, non-intellectuals. And they're offended by it.
How did she describe
you half-human?
No.
Creature. She called them creatures. Yeah. I know she does say the word creature.
No,
and
I
they
know,
don't
but
like
I mean...
that. You're not going to think of it.
God damn it.
But she offends them because they consider them to be... They consider themselves to be...
They're their own thing.
Yeah. They're just as intellectual as humans. And she calls them, you know, creatures basically of low intellect. And then, of course, they... attack her and carry her off, right? Is that what they...
Yeah, they take her off. They take her off. They carry
her off.
And
that's like the last we see of Umbridge, at least in this movie. That's the last we see of Umbridge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Good riddance, because she sucks. So the gang, it's Harry, Hermione, Ron, Ginny, Luna, and Neville. That's the gang now. They make their way to the Ministry because they have to save Sirius. They ride on Thestrals. We didn't talk about Thestrals yet,
and we see them early on in the movie too. As soon as
see
they get
early
to the school,
on,
yeah.
Harry sees these like skeletal horses, basically running the carriages.
They're like zombie Pegasus.
Yeah, and he's like, "Whoa, I've never seen these. What have these always been? What?" And people are like, "What are you even looking at?"
Oh yeah, Umbridge describes them as near human.
Near human. That offends him. Harry's like, what are these? And people are like, I don't even know what you're talking about.
Like, there's nothing there.
There's always horseless. Well,
he's like, no, what's pulling the carriages? And she's like, nothing pulls the carriages. It's always, you know, whatever.
And then Luna, don't worry, you're just as sane as I am. I can see them too.
And she said they're reading a Quibbler upside down.
Yes.
She's so adorable.
She is.
God damn it.
So Thestrals, you can only see them if you've witnessed death. So now, obviously, Harry can see them. He went through the whole Cedric thing. Luna could see them because her mom died when she was 9.
I know you and I have had this.
Why can't Harry see them earlier?
Because he's not aware of what he saw.
Because he's not aware of what he saw when he was 1.5.
Yeah.
That's what I tell myself in my head. Because I know we've like, well, Harry saw death when his parents were killed. But yeah, he wasn't aware
of
it happening.
The
memory is not there.
The awareness
really.
Of it. Yeah.
But Luna, we found out her mom died when she was... When Luna was 9, she was a very talented witch, but loved to experiment.
Mm-hmm.
Experiment
and so
with
she
mom.
Blew herself up.
Yeah. So they ride Thestrals to the Ministry to save. So that would have been interesting for the people who can't see the Thestrals. I wouldn't have enjoyed that.
Obviously, they could. I mean, but you could feel them. You just can't see them.
Yeah, first. It would just be weird. It'd be weird. So they get to the Ministry, and it's like a giant room full of glass orbs, which turn out to all be prophecies. And Neville's like, Harry, your name is on this one. He happens to see a prophecy, and it says Harry Potter's name. In the book, it's right next to one that says Neville Longbottom, but we won't get into that.
Does Neville not see his then in the book?
It's different how Harry comes across it.
Oh,
I
wait.
Think.
Yeah, Neville isn't the one who finds it in the book.
I don't think so, because we do see one that says Neville's name on it in the book.
I do remember that.
Which isn't even a thing in the movies.
Yeah, they make
which
no...
Which is fine.
Yeah.
That's
too many threads.
Too much lore going in.
Yeah, there's too many threads.
So yeah, the prophecy is actually something that Voldemort is after, because Voldemort needs to know who...
Well, he wants to know what the... Like, Voldemort knows that a prophecy exists. I think he just needs to know what...
Because the prophecy basically is neither one can live while the other... Neither one can...
Live while the other survives.
While the other survives. So Voldemort needs to know who he's up against. And because of a prophecy made by Trelawney 14 years ago, which brought Voldemort to Harry's parents' house in the first place.
Was that why?
Yeah.
I thought it was just because he was just going to kill them because they were against Voldemort.
Voldemort heard the prophecy or something. Or heard about the prophecy and I thought, you got to reread The Order of the Phoenix. There's so much shit in that movie, in that book.
Because Voldemort wouldn't need that prophecy then if he knows what it is. Because all it says is what Voldemort already is aiming for anyways.
I don't know.
Like, it's not like Voldemort can change the prophecy if he has
it. Yeah.
He needs to know what it says.
Well, I think in the
book, I always assumed that Voldemort was just going to kill the Potters just because he was going to kill the Potters.
And basically in the book, when I think even Harry's like, why me and not Neville? Because really, the prophecy originally said a boy born at the end of July. Both Harry and Neville were born at the end of July. And Voldemort decided just go with this one.
Well, and Voldemort created his Harry
own,
Potter.
Yeah. Because he just chose to go that way.
I mean, if he had chosen Neville, it would be Neville.
But Neville Longbottom in the Order of the Phoenix.
So really, the prophecy does nothing.
No, it just tells Harry that they can't live at the same time.
It just tells Voldemort what he already knows.
Yeah, and it tells Harry neither one could live while the other survives.
Yeah. So really, the prophecy is just a MacGuffin for...
Yeah, but the Voldemort and the Death Eaters are after it. So the Death Eaters appear at the Ministry while our gang is there, and there's a big fight. Big
Which
fight
is a cool
ensues.
One. It's pretty
it's
cool.
It's a cool one. The Hall of Prophecies is a cool, fully CGI set.
Oh,
because some cool shit happens that you can't do
it's
practically.
Floor to infinity shelves.
Yeah, of orbs, of glass orbs.
Of empty snow globes.
And Ginny and her powerful spells, that she her Reducto spell.
So Ginny is the... Hermione's the best overall... magic user.
Uh-huh.
Ginny is the most powerful.
Powerful. Her Reducto spell, which we learned that she's got a great Reducto spell in training when they're doing Dumbledore's Army, and she uses it in the Hall of Prophecies that causes all the orbs to come crashing down.
So much
down.
Like how Lockhart was especially adept at using memory charms, Ginny's... Mm-hmm. Ginny seems to be especially adept at destructive spells.
And Harry's good at Expelliarmus. I feel every wizard has their strength when
what
it comes to...
What is Ron's strength?
I don't know.
Humility?
Wow. Ron. I love him in this movie, too. When don't I? So they... What does it say? Ambushed by Death Eaters, led by Lucius Malfoy and Bellatrix Lestrange, Lucius reveals that Harry only saw a dream of Sirius. He's like, oh yeah, we planted that in your head.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't really see him being tortured. We just lured you here. Ha ha ha. But Harry's holding the prophecy and he refuses to give it to them. Because he's like, no, this is mine. Big fight. Then the Death Eaters capture Harry's friends and threaten to kill them. Harry gives up the prophecy to save his friends.
Right.
Does it break?
And no, it breaks when...
During the fight.
Yeah, because...
And no one hears it. Like, it's kind of a waste.
Because when the Order of the Phoenix swoops in...
Yeah, the Order of the Phoenix comes down.
Lucius
I love
is knocked
their,
off his feet.
I love their appearance. How they just kind of...
Well, because it's the polar opposite of how the Death Eaters travel, which is black smoke.
Yeah, this is David Yates' contribution to this series, is how he... The mist and the smoke of people appearing, it's still happening.
Is that a David Yates invention?
It's a David Yates thing. And it's still going on in the Fantastic Beasts.
Is that not how it's described in the books then?
I don't remember. But I didn't see it until this movie.
Oh, yeah, I know.
I was like, ooh, this is a new way of entering and exiting.
Yeah, because we don't see people flying until now.
Yeah, I mean, it's different from apparating, I think. But we see it from now on.
So I do like how...
I know it's a David Yates movie, because I can be like, oh, it's how they're exiting and exiting.
Because, entering. I mean, it is a very it is quite on the nose, where the villains are black smoke and the good guys are this bright white light and mist, you know. But
yeah,
but it looks very cool. I mean, I don't care if it's too stereotypical. It's
fine.
Great. It's perfect.
Because there's so much going on, you kind of have to know who's who.
Well, yeah.
And this is, I think they actually had to hire a choreographer for these fight sequences, for these wand spell fights.
Oh, yeah, they're intense.
They're intense. This is where Sirius says, nice one, James, to Harry. Caught that one.
And even Harry catches it.
Even Harry's kind of like, whoa.
But I think, and
he's
Harry,
so in the moment.
And Harry likes it, though.
He likes it. Sirius is so in the moment. He's having so much fun doing this. It's probably the first time he's felt alive and contributing to the wizarding world by fighting these people. But
it's short-lived.
Bellatrix gets to him.
That?
It's a little bit different from the book. She doesn't say Avada Kedavra in the book.
Isn't it just some spell that knocks him into the
veil?
Right.
But in the movie, she does Avada Kedavra. And he falls through a veil. I can't even describe this veil. I mean,
it. But I do like that. At that moment, Sirius knows he's dead or dying, and he smiles. Though he's okay with it.
Does he look at Harry?
I don't know if he looks at Harry, but he doesn't look anguished. He doesn't look upset.
Uh huh. He's not fighting.
He actually looks relieved, almost.
Like at peace, maybe. Yeah. But this, Harry knows right away.
But then, but Harry's look is traumatic.
We get our Fellowship of the Ring moment.
Yeah.
We get our, they do the same thing. I mean, not saying that they copied,
but Gandalf.
There's a reason why we don't hear the scream that Harry gives. You don't hear him yelling.
It's
same with Frodo. I mean, you hear kind of a off mic,
because you hear all the background noise instead.
Yeah, very on purpose, because it's too hard to even
I get it.
The look on Harry's face. I mean,
the look is enough.
Props to Daniel Radcliffe for doing this scene.
At that moment where Sirius falls through the veil.
Yeah.
The look on Harry's face is already.
Yeah.
It's charming.
And who grabs him? Does Lupin grab him?
Lupin grabs him. Lupin holds him back. And then he runs off after Bellatrix.
My one thing, I always wanted a little bit more reaction from Lupin.
Lupin's look is good.
I'm just like, you've been friends with him since you were 11. Because
he looks at, he's looking
but I know
where it happened, and he realizes he's the last of the good ones. Oh, he's the last of the gang.
That's sad.
You know, even though Peter Pettigrew is also still alive, but I mean,
he's not a good one.
He's the last of the three amigos.
And really, at the end of the series,
there's none left.
None left. We already talked about Deathly Hallows Part 2. No spoilers. Yeah, so Sirius is gone, and Harry is fucking lost. I don't know. Bellatrix is taunting him. I killed
Sirius.
Does
she hit him with the Cruciatus Curse?
He hits her.
I mean, that's what I meant.
And I love it, and I love it in the book.
He does do it, right?
He does it, and she's like, oh, you have to mean it, Harry. She says it in the book.
Well,
I know,
but it's still enough to knock her down.
Enough to knock her down, but she... Because I remember in the book, very clearly, she's like...
But in the movie, it's Voldemort who's saying it.
You have to mean it, Harry. Which I love that line, because...
But yeah, it was a Cruciatus curse.
It shows you the power of these curses that you can't just say Crucio. It's like, you have to mean it. And she is knocked off her feet.
Yeah.
And she is, for a second, kind of like...
Like, I think it stung, but...
Like, she looks scared for a moment.
Yeah.
But...
Well, because she knows that he's capable of it.
Yeah. But then Dumbledore appears, and Voldemort appears. Voldemort appears first, right?
Yeah, because we hear him first, and then he shows up.
He kind of...
He materializes.
And then...
Does he start talking to Harry?
Monologuing.
Voldemort
comes, and it's an awesome scene. I love this scene.
Well, because I like he flings Harry away, and then at the same time, Bellatrix slides into the...
I love her exit.
Yeah, well, she
right
backs
to the
up.
Flue, yeah. And she goes whoosh, in the green flame.
She makes her escape.
Yeah, Voldemort appears. Dumbledore arrives through the Flue network moments before Voldemort can get to Harry, and then we have the duel between Voldemort and Dumbledore, which I just love. It makes me feel like this is what it would have been like between Voldemort and Grindelwald, which maybe we'll see in these movies, these Fantastic Beasts movies. Who knows? But I mean, every time I see the scene, I always think like, is this what it was like when he fought Grindelwald? You know, and everyone talks about, oh, when Dumbledore defeated the Dark Wizard Grindelwald, and it was like the duel to end all duels and stuff. And
really, it's we're looking at like Obi-Wan and Vader.
It is. It's a master and apprentice.
Yeah.
And I love, love, love. I think it's in the books too. When Voldemort will, I mean, Dumbledore will only call him Tom to bring him down a few pegs.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, love it. I just think it's so.
Because Voldemort is the mask he's hiding behind.
Yeah. And to Dumbledore, it's like.
He's just the kid, Tom.
Yeah. And just to, you know, it's like a dose of reality to Voldemort. Hey. You think you're this, but you're really this. And I just think it's so great and whatever. I just love it. Bellatrix escapes. I loved all the shit they do to each other with the glass and Dumbledore turning into sand. And
Voldemort creates fire first. And then,
yeah, and then the ball of water is super cool that he does. And then the glass shards that Dumbledore turns into sand. And I know in our last episode that I said this is the first time I actually cried during a Harry Potter movie. It was this part when
you said about how Voldemort doesn't have friends. He doesn't have
when he possesses Harry. When Voldemort possesses Harry, and Harry has all those flashbacks of all those things, and then he starts all his flashbacks suddenly are with friendship and love and all this stuff, and I remember sitting in the theater going, just thinking. Daniel Radcliffe is doing a great job at this part.
Oh yeah,
he did great. And just the fighting back with what Voldemort could never know, which is love and friendship. And I just remember the first time seeing that, going overwhelmed with emotion. And even last night watching it, I got kind of teary. I was like, this is the only way he can fight back and the only way he can win.
Yeah,
because like he says to Voldemort, you'll never know, I feel sorry for you, whatever he says, because you'll never know friendship, you'll never know love.
Yeah, what is
something
that?
Like that
he says a phrase. He doesn't say I pity you, does he?
I feel sorry for you. Is that what he says?
I think maybe, yeah.
And that's how he defeats him in that moment. And then, you know, Fudge and the Ministry show up and they see Voldemort because Harry managed
he's able to
exorcise him out, basically. Yeah. And then, the Ministry.
And Fudge just catches a glimpse of Voldemort, but it's enough to where...
Fine, we're like,
he can no longer deny.
Yeah, exactly. And right before Voldemort disintegrates.
Vaporizes again, yeah.
And we hear him, he's back. You know, and everyone kind of turns their story out. Oh, maybe Dumbledore and Harry were right. You know, yeah, we fucked up. We thought it was fake news. It really wasn't. And, you know, Dumbledore kind of explains to Harry why he's been distancing himself this whole year. Because, you know, Harry's been so frustrated. And it's a great scene in the book that's not in the movie where Harry fucking freaks out at him. Destroys his entire office. Do you remember that? The page is like all caps. I love it.
Yeah, I vaguely remember
that. He's throwing things in Dumbledore. He's so mad. So finally at the end of this movie, Dumbledore explains why he's been like he has. And he was just afraid that Dumbledore would... see into him, right? Is that what Dumbledore explains? That he distanced himself from Harry throughout the year, hoping it would lessen the risk of Voldemort using their connection.
Yeah, because he had suspected that they were connected.
Yeah.
I think ever since he realized that Harry could speak to snakes.
Yeah, probably.
Because then that's when he realized, oh, Voldemort.
Well, I think it's when, in the first movie, when Harry's like, why couldn't he touch me? And Dumbledore's like, it's because he put some of his thing in you and...
Well, I thought it was just the old magic, the love.
Oh, I don't know.
That's the only way that's explained.
Oh. Okay.
It's because that was Lily's.
Maybe it's the snakes then, because I know he does tell him, because when he made that scar. He transferred
his some shit to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that the snakes?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And yeah, and then basically Harry's like, is it true? Neither one can live while the other survives. And Dumbledore's like, yeah.
So she's like, so that means I have to kill him.
Yeah. Have fun. You got two books left to do this. Yeah. So it's, like I said, there's so much in this book and it's such a joy and stress to read. It's a very stressful book. There are times when I read it, and I'm like, this is the best one because there's so much in it. And you only get such a snippet of it in the movie. Mm-hmm. But and that they all did a great job. You know, they're getting better with each role. You know, 15 years old. They have five movies under their belt now. And
I do like how, you know how Matthew Lewis is quite a hunky young man.
He's a hunky now.
And you can definitely see him start to kind of develop that hunkiness now, but
sure,
he's held back by those goddamn prosthetic teeth.
And I think they pat him,
and they give him a little gut.
Yeah, they give him a little gut,
and you can it obviously looks intentional.
Yeah,
like it doesn't just look like that's just his body. He does look like he's wearing something, but
yeah,
not where he's like, oh, he's
that's a prosthetic.
Like, I mean, but yeah,
I think it. I mean, it's not really until Deathly Hallows, I think, where he kind of is like, oh, now he looks like how he should.
Yeah. Well, in Deathly Hallows, yeah, because like his face is more sculpted too. Like,
yeah. Hermione's hair is lighter in this movie.
Mm-hmm, I noticed.
There was some controversy when it came to one of the posters for the IMAX poster. In the marketing of all this movie, they made Hermione's hair blonde.
Oh,
bigger busted.
Yeah. Well, they do that a lot.
I mean, they did care that all the time. But they did it for Hermione in this one. And people were like, she's under 18. She's playing a 15-year-old. There's no need to make her big boobed. And that was, just for one of the IMAX posters. But
I kind of remember that.
Her hair is a little bit lighter in this movie. It's very nice, though.
Well,
Harry looks so much older in this movie than he does in Goblet of Fire. I know it's been like a year and a half since the release of Goblet of Fire. Probably a good 2+ years since he filmed Goblet of Fire. You can tell obviously his hair is short now. It's not the Goblet of Fire long shag that it was. He looks older than the rest of them look older. I'm not saying he looks older than the rest of them, but the difference is much more advanced in him than it is in Hermione and Ron, I think.
Ron's face stays kind of the same. He always kind of has a childlike face. His upper arms
he's getting muscular.
Real big, though.
Yeah, he's getting, because he wears those tank tops to bed.
Yeah.
And you can see it.
I mean,
yeah.
he's bulking up.
And yeah.
I mean, he's not a big dude, but he's
definitely, he's a teenager.
But
you know, they're all teenagers.
Definitely, like, got some protein on those bones.
Yeah, and he's very attractive. But I mean, part one.
I mean, Emma Watson is very attractive.
But she's just kind of she's a classic beauty.
She was a cute kid.
Yeah, well, you said she was going to be. Yeah.
And now she's getting.
She's still underage. Why did you say?
No, but she's getting.
She's
pretty. And she's getting prettier.
And she's very pretty in Half-Blood Prince. Because they go to that.
Oh, yeah.
That party.
The party, yeah. She's, God damn it. She's just adorable at that little. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so, because everyone does look a little bit older. A little more old. Because I think it's no more noticeable when you become a teenager that you're older. Because even like the Patil twin, or whatever they call Patil twins, they look older. And this movie, I mean, it's the same people. Dean is finally taller than everyone. I love Dean's hat.
Like, I mean, like most of the kids are losing their baby fat.
Yeah.
You know?
Seamus isn't growing because he's Irish. He's a leprechaun. But he looks older.
He looks like a small 40-year-old man.
Yeah. And I just love Dean.
Especially when his shirt tails are hanging out and shit, you know? I mean, I'm like, dude.
Seamus is very anti-hairy in this movie, which always stressed me out.
For the first two-thirds of
it. Yeah, because he's like, yo, my mom didn't want me to come back to school because of all the shit you were saying.
Of you, basically.
Yeah, because of you. And oh my God, gosh, Seamus. And Dean is kind of like trying to be the...
The mediator.
The mediator between them.
The intermediary.
But yeah. This it's one of the more stressful movies because there's so much angst and you don't know. And Umbridge causes
Umbridge.
Stress.
It's Umbridge.
It's Umbridge. Yeah. And the end, you know, and Harry being possessed and in a way that Ginny wasn't. You know, because Ginny was possessed by Tom Riddle, but not in.
But
you
now
know,
Harry
just...
is possessed by Voldemort. You know,
and which... Voldemort's making him. Yeah, it's very intense.
Well,
but...
and it's Harry losing his last bit of family too, right in front of him.
Right in front. I mean, yeah, that's raw when all this is happening, and you know the movie doesn't end on a. Happy note.
Oh, not at all. No.
It's very foreboding because it's like, oh, by the way, you can't live if Voldemort's gonna, so you gotta kill. And oh yeah, I know your godfather just died. And oh, you gotta go back to the Dursleys.
Yeah.
You know, it's, oh, and you're gonna be 16. You know, I mean, a couple quick facts. The US premiere took place on July 8th. Yeah, that's great. After the premiere, they got the three stars, got their handprints at Chinese
Grauman,
Theater.
Grauman's Chinese.
Got their handprints, footprints, and wand prints. We gotta go see that. That's kind of fun. They got their wand prints.
I hate going to that theater. It's
I know.
So crowded.
I know, but you know, maybe. Even though the book is the longest in the series, the film is the second shortest. I wonder what the shortest is. It's not the ones that we watched before this.
I don't know.
I wonder if Half-Blood Prince is the shortest.
I don't know. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
During filming, Alan Rickman banned Matthew Lewis and Rupert Grint from being within 5 meters of his new BMW. Because during the making of Goblet of Fire, they spilled a milkshake in his car. Speaking of... So Sean and I went, we were at dinner tonight, and Sean came across a BuzzFeed list of all the cars that the Harry Potter cast drives. Random list, but that reminded me of this.
Well, Alan Rickman was shown with a Maserati Ghibli.
Yeah,
because so.
He didn't want a BMW with milkshake in it. I can just imagine him going to Neville and Ron, you cannot go within 5 meters of my car. Get your milkshakes away.
That's pretty funny.
Emma Watson almost didn't come back after this movie. She kind of contemplated, do I want to come back? But then she realized how hard it would have been to see someone else be Hermione.
Oh, yeah.
For Half-Blood Prince and Deathly Hallows. Hmm? Can you imagine if she didn't come back? I mean, that's crazy talk now.
No, I cannot.
Right?
Outcry would... No.
If you had had Dan Radcliffe, Rupert Grint, and some random...
Like, I can't imagine it.
I know. It's crazy.
Go make a news. Who would it have been?
Like, okay, girl, you got 3 movies left. You can do it. But yeah, I mean, she realized, wait, she couldn't bear seeing someone else.
I wonder if that.
She said it would be
seed,
uncomfortable.
I wonder if that seed was planted by like her managers, whatever, like warning her about getting typecast. Which, I mean, I feel like happens less and less nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, you know, these kids, at this point, we're making a good amount of money.
I mean, these kids...
I'm not saying that money would have driven them, the only reason to
well,
do
no,
it,
no,
but...
I know, but I mean, and there, but there, these kids don't ever have to work after these movies.
Nah.
They do it because they love the art.
Yeah, and what
they
else
love
are they
the work.
What else are they going to do?
You know.
I don't want to say that, but, you know.
But, I mean, what are they going to do, work at Trader Joe's? Work at, you
Some
know.
People do, and it's
I know.
Okay.
So, I mean, they're, you know, this is what drives them. So, I mean, they're at that point now where they do what they want. They do it.
I do what
because,
I want.
They do it because they want to, not because they need to.
Yeah.
I mean, they may feel the compulsion to do it because.
So you think they'll ever do a Cursed Child movie with these people?
Tom Felton says no.
Ah.
Tom Felton would do it, but he says the cast won't.
No, I know.
But, yeah.
I mean, how they're what, like almost 30, this cast?
Now? Today?
Yeah. They're about 10 years younger than me.
Emma Watson is 14 years younger than me.
Okay, I'm glad that you know the math. I think they're born in like 90.
Sure. Ish, yeah.
89, 90. Felton might be a little bit older.
Sure, whatever.
So yeah, I mean, they're about 30 now. Cursed child age. I'm not going to throw it out the window. I hope, I don't know. We're going to hear these rumors all the time.
Anyways, box office and budget. Let's go.
Can I talk about Nicholas Hooper?
Who's that?
He's the film, the music composer.
Oh, yeah, I did see his
new
name.
New director means new composer, Nicholas Hooper. I honestly don't know what else he's done. But he did this in Half-Blood Prince.
Okay. Good enough.
We got some new themes. We got Umbridge theme. Yeah.
Okay.
Enjoyable. Box office, $150 million.
Was the budget.
Yep.
Hope that wasn't the box office.
That was a failure.
That'd be a flopperoony.
Budget, $150 million. Box office, $940.
Jesus. H. Criminolis.
It was the second highest grossing movie in 2007.
That's pretty close to $1 billion.
It is. Second highest after Pirates at World's End.
Did Pirates make $1 billion?
Well, it was second to that, so let's say it did. I don't know.
At World's End?
The last one.
Hey, Google, how much did Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End gross?
Worldwide.
What's the worldwide gross? Oh, Google, you suck tonight. What are you on? Union okay. Break?
Ooh, 963. Oh, so just short of $1 billion, but just over this one.
A hair more than this and a hair under $1 billion.
It became, this movie became the sixth highest grossing film of all time by the end of its theatrical run. It was behind Titanic, Return of the King, Dead Man's Chest, Sorcerer's Stone, and At World's End. So Lord of the Rings, Pirates, and Harry.
So Avatar has not come out yet.
In 2007? No, it came out in 2009. Hmm. So all franchises except for Titanic. Cora's like, who is talking?
Cora she hates Google.
She hates our Google Home. Because whenever we ask her a question, she runs over and tries to find a person. Oh, we didn't say who played Dolores Umbridge. I'm sorry. It was Imelda Staunton. A very good friend of Emma Thompson's, by the way.
And it's funny because
this had the biggest first day gross of a Harry Potter movie. Are they not including Deathly Hallows in that?
I don't know. Don't That's look at interesting. Me.
So Rotten Tomatoes, our last one, what, didn't it hit 90 last time?
I don't remember.
This was a little bit lower.
88.
The lowest one we've seen so far.
85.
78.
Oh.
Roger Ebert, usually on our side.
Not a fan.
Gave the film 2.5 out of 4, saying, Harry no longer has much joy.
No shit, dude.
He's right. This is Harry's most depressing movie. He's 15 and he hates his life. Doesn't mean the movie doesn't have joy? I disagree. But yeah. But really, I saw the 78, but then all the reviews I read were complimentary. So I don't know who... Everyone's saying they like that it's a lot darker. Yeah. And maybe people had issues with...
Have they not read the books?
A 1,000-page book to a 2-hour movie. Who the fuck knows? I don't even care.
Did they not know what the story was going to be about?
But I don't know. I like it, and that's all that matters. This is one where I like the book better. I mean, I just like the books better in general. But this is one where I really am like, if I really want the full effect of Order of the Phoenix, I'm going to read the book because there's so much going on in it. And it's just so juicy and I love it.
I don't remember the books well enough.
You should read them. I think you should reread them after we finish this series. Anyway, that's it. What do we got next time? Half-Blood Prince? Yeah. I think is one of the best high school movies ever
made.
It's
one of my favoriter ones.
A lot of people throw this off as a cast off when they realize how they don't realize how important this book is and this movie, because we get introduction of a lot of things that lead up to the end. So it's a fun one.
Cool.
It's the first movie that I saw post baby in the theater. That's what I remember.
Okay.
That's all.
Okay.
All right. So yeah, until next time, Half Blood Prince. We're almost through Harry Potter's years at Hogwarts. Yay!
I've yawned like three times.
I know. Time for bed. It's like when? 8 o'clock.
Oh my God, we're old.
8:45. Okay. We'll see you next time.
Okay.
Bye!
Bye-bye.